We're just going to learn a little bit more about Andrew and the racing side of things. So just want to welcome Andrew up here this morning. All right, where to start? I guess probably the obvious question I've got is that V8 Ute racing is hardly a nice casual Sunday drive. What got you into the
Look, I've been racing for about 8 or 9 years now, and same as probably most other guys, I enjoy cars and enjoy driving, and so I was very fortunate when I was growing up to have some great cars and sort of some machinery that we all sort of used to hang out with and drive around the streets and that sort of stuff. And one day I got a phone call from a mate of mine saying, "Hey, look, why don't we go and have a race?" It was a 500-kilometre race, and it was a long-distance race. It was down at Wakefield Park, so that meant it was about 221 laps around Wakefield Park, and that was the start of the racing. I guess it was a beautiful motor car. You've probably heard of it. It was a sleek, beautiful sports car by the name of a Daewoo Lanos. Was my first car that I got to race in.
So you put your hand up when I asked, Arthur?
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Daewoo's. Gotta love the Daewoo's.
Right. We noticed in the DVD you're obviously hitting breakneck speed down some of those straights. How fast do the Utes go?
Yeah, look, the Utes, we'll do about 260 kilometres an hour down the main straight, down Conrod Straight this year at Bathurst. It's pretty fast sort of stuff. And when we go into schools, we talk about courage to the kids, and that's part of the courage, obviously, is racing cars. I'm actually very fortunate where I'm actually racing a Fujitsu supercar at Bathurst as well this year, which will also have Jesus on the side of it. And basically, that'll probably hit around about 290 to 295 wow. kilometres an hour. So, yeah, it gets exciting when you get to the turn. Like I was racing up there earlier on this year in the Lotus in the 12-hour I did up there at the beginning of the year. And when you get to that spot, about 250 kilometres an hour in the Lotus, instead of braking, applying the brake at the chase or the kink there, we actually stay flat. And so we're actually taking that flat through there at 250 kilometres an hour. And then you put another car on the inside, which is in your road. Like I had an M3 that I was tagging down there at there, and actually took the M3 on the outside of that corner at 250, and
wow.
and that's where it gets exciting. That's real motor racing, not how fast you can do in a straight line. That's gets pretty boring, to be quite honest. But it's when you're actually doing that sort of stuff that it gets exciting.
Do you ever get scared when you're racing?
Look, you don't. I don't think you get scared. You certainly. You have a sense of realization. Every time you go out there, when someone. When you have a big accident like this year at Clipsal, three or four of the Utes, and I was actually. If you've seen the footage, I was actually the first one to come through directly after this accident, and it was a massive, massive, massive crash. And one of the guys ended up in hospital for 6 months, and lost some functionality in his body. His body just basically shut down on him, and I went to visit him, and Steve Peach, our pastor that works with our team, we went to visit him in the hospital up in Queensland a couple of times. And turning up to a guy that 21 years of age, that you've raced with. I've raced with Matt Kingsley in the Lotuses, so I've known him for quite a while. And turning up and talking to someone who has lost has now involuntary spasm. You'll be talking to him, and all of a sudden his body will start shaking, and that freaks you out, because I've got two kids and a wife, and racing cars is dangerous. There's no doubt about it.
What's the biggest accident you've been involved in?
Biggest accident is probably, I've had two major ones. One was at Canberra quite a few years ago. It was probably also the most embarrassing motorsport moment I've had, because it was the first lap of practice on a new track I'd never raced at, in a brand new car that I'd never raced in. And the boys had come up to me beforehand and said, "Listen, just be careful, the car has a tendency to flick on you." And I said, "Oh yeah, yeah." So I said, "Is that under brakes when you're trailing into the corner?" No, you can actually just be on the accelerator, just come off the accelerator a little bit and it'll flick you. It's just the way the suspension setup works. We're in MGs." And I said, yeah, no worries, I'm a great driver. And so I went out there, and first lap of practice, of course, coming onto the main straight, was doing about 130, kilometres an hour. I thought, oh, I'm probably carrying a little bit too much speed here. So I just came off the accelerator a little bit and ended in the wall, backwards. First lap, red flag. The boys came up after and said, yeah, you listen well, don't you? So that was the most embarrassing run. The biggest one I've probably had is actually in Perth this year when we're there doing a test day. And I was coming through the S's and a front suspension arm broke. As I was coming through, I was just plucking forth, doing about 140 kilometres an hour, all of a sudden the car turned violently to the left and ran straight head-on into the concrete wall at 140 kilometres an hour.
Walls don't bounce, do they?
No, they don't.
What's your favourite track?
Favourite track is definitely Bathurst. It's a wonderful, wonderful circuit. 6.2 kilometres long. It's got about 17 turns in it, and the undulation of it is just extraordinary. When I was there in the Lotus this year, once again, to give you an idea of how enjoyable it is, on lap one, we're in Lotuses, obviously, so they're underpowered. We're in the 12-hour, so you've got, 300 horsepower cars around you, that sort of stuff. So it was sort of lap one where you got the opportunity to sort of stick it up these guys and have some fun with them. And so I remember going through there and overtaking an M3 on the inside, going through over Skyline, and then got behind a very powerful HSV coming into where the Holden sign is, and I thought this was very ironic for the Holden driver as I actually shot past him as he's braking, and I actually was still flat going through the Holden sign and braked as we went down the dip. That was the first time we actually hit the brakes, going from about 180 kilometres an hour, and that's the Lotus. We got down to the main straight, of course, and he just waved at me as he took off down the main straight, but that's the difference in the cars. So yeah, look, Bathurst is fantastic. It's a great circuit. It's got everything in it. It's fast, it's flowing, it's got some tight stuff in it as well. It's a real challenge for drivers.
Right. Now, presumably to race the team you do, you can't do it on your own. So what sort of support and pit crew do you have?
We actually outsourced. One of the main things when we went to the Jesus thing, we wanted to be professional. That was a really important thing that we wanted to do. So we outsourced a lot of the work. We run with a company called WPR, Wollongong Performance Racing. So they actually prepare the car and bring a lead mechanic to the circuit, and they transport it and all that sort of stuff. I bring with me an engineer. I bring my own engineer who helps me set up the car, and I bring another engineer guy that works with me the main mechanic on the car and that sort of stuff. And then Steve Peach, who's our pastor that works with us 3 days a week, he comes along for interaction with the crowd and that sort of stuff. We're talking about racing in front of, there's a million live spectators we race in front of each year. It's a great opportunity to sort of have a presence in that marketplace. It's pretty important that Steve is there to be that person and obviously myself to engage in those guys as well.
Right. So we noticed the Jesus Racing sponsorship all over the car. What's the story? We can't seem to notice any sort of mainstream major brands like Castrol and...
Yeah, sure, that's right.
What's happening there?
Yeah, Steve always says, so couldn't you get any sponsorship? So you decided to put Jesus on. He's a lovely guy when he interviews me. Nice to not have him here this morning. The issue with that is that, I was challenged, with my faithfulness and my overtness of my Christian belief and that sort of stuff as to what I was doing in my life. And I was racing motor cars and that sort of stuff. And so I came up with an idea of putting a little fish on the back of my car or John 3:16 to tell people that I was a Christian and that sort of stuff. And I went home and told my wife about this. And she said, well, if you want to tell people about being a Christian, why don't you just put Jesus down the side? I said, thanks, love. Got to love your wife, don't you? Yep. That's a wonderful, encouraging idea that my wife came up with. But as I thought about it and as I engaged in that thought process, I thought, well, why not? And so in the 12-hour this year, I was Lotus's number one driver, full-paid factory drive, and that sort of stuff. It's not that I can't get sponsorship, it's just that we wanted to have Jesus, and the important thing about putting Jesus on the car was not to mix the message. If I had ABC Kitchens or XYZ on the car as well as Jesus, the commentators would not have been referring to the car as the Jesus car as they do. They would have would have referred to it as the ABC Kitchens car. And so it was a step of faith. My idea was that we would get 600 people or 300 people to put $600 in. That was, we've got a club called the 300-600 Club. And the idea of that was just 300 blokes, 300 businesses or whatever, giving $600, and that raised $180,000. It cost us about $210,000 to race the car each year. It cost us $285,000 to run the whole ministry with our schools program. So it's pretty expensive. As I explained at a Baptist church last weekend, you know, the idea of the 300-600 was 300 people to give $600 or for 600 Baptists to give $300. You can work that out. I can say that I'm a Baptist, so I get away with it.
Excellent. All right. Well, that was just a bit of an introduction about what you do. So you're going to talk to us a little bit more about your ministry in a bit more detail now?
Yep. Great. Right. Great. Excellent. Well, thanks very much for having me here today, and I get the opportunity, the privilege, I guess, as I call it, to go around the country and to talk to people about what I do. One of the things that came when I went forward with this idea of racing cars and that sort of stuff, I never thought that I'd be a guy that would be walking around talking to men's groups about what I do, why I did it, and that sort of stuff. And more important, I never thought that I'd actually end up going to schools all over Australia and talking to kids about the issue of courage, which is what we talk to the young folk about when we go into schools. And we now, as a ministry, we now will visit 30,000 kids across Australia in schools over the next 12 months, and that's a real privilege. When I talk to kids, I talk to them on the issue of courage, and when I talk to men, I talk to them on the issue of integrity, because I think integrity is an issue that we as men need to face very, very much head on and look at. And so I'm going to talk to you today about integrity. And basically, integrity is about the motor racing. If you think about it, I'm driving a car and I'm in a Jesus ute. Right, I've got Jesus on the side of my car. So if you think about that, there's some implied integrity that comes along with me being the Jesus guy. And so I'll tell you a little story. My first race ever in the Jesus ute, I'm at Clipsal, race one in the Jesus ute, flying down to turn one, and I get to turn one and all of a sudden, there's a left-hand corner, I'm doing about 145, 150 kilometres an hour. I'm slightly in front of the guy next to me, right, going through a left-hand corner, I'm on the left-hand side. What that generally means, and a quick lesson of motor racing, is I go through the corner, he either follows me very closely, not trying to hit me, and then pulls in behind me or tries to overtake me to the next corner, or something like that. But at this point in time, for whatever reason, this guy didn't understand that's the way that rules of motor racing worked. So he decided instead to come across and actually just go smash into the side of my car. Bounced off each other, kept going and ran the rest of the race and all that sort of stuff. And so basically I got to the end of the race and I'm in the pits and everyone's sort of asking me, the crew's asking me, like, what happened? What was the story with, Ryle? What was that about? What's going on? I said, well, I don't know, you have to ask him. And so all of a sudden I hear over the loudspeaker, "Would the driver of the Jesus ute please come to the steward's office?" That's pretty much the police of the racing series. So race one, round one, the Jesus ute's already upstairs getting talked to by the police. Great start, great auspicious start to our motor racing. So I'm up there and we're sitting down with them and they say to me, "Andrew, what's going on, mate? Turn one." I said, "Well, I'm on the left-hand side, left-hand corner, slightly in front. My corner. I've been doing this for a few years now. You might want to ask Ryle." So they turned to Ryle and said, "Ryle said, mate, you've heard what Andrew said. What were you thinking?" He goes, "Well, mate, I was going down that corner. He's in the Jesus ute." He said, "I didn't think he'd have the balls to go that fast." I turned around and I said, "Ryle," I said, "I'd really appreciate," I said, "well, there's your first lesson of Christianity," is what I said to him. I said, "there's your first lesson on Christianity. Christians aren't wimps, right?" I said, "so would you mind going and telling all your mates that? Because I don't really want to have this happen every time I go for a corner when I'm racing." But, it's a really important thing about motor racing. There's a thing called bump and run, right? And bump and run basically means as I get to a corner and someone's in front of me, if I give them just a slight little tap on the rear as we go into the entry of that corner, it will push them offline. And what that'll allow me to do is get better mid-corner speed and either get past them mid-corner or get a better exit from the corner and overtake them, right? So fairly simple, easy technique. Don't go trying it on the road when you're going through roundabouts. I don't encourage you to do that. But it's a fairly simple technique. But if the Jesus guy was doing that, where would the integrity be in having the Jesus on the side of the car? So I've got to live with a certain level of expectation around integrity, what I call implied integrity when I go racing.
Okay, and so that's what I want to just share with you as far as the motor racing side of things is concerned. But integrity goes much further in my life and in all of our lives than motor racing, and none of you guys probably race cars like I do, and that sort of stuff. So I'm just going to give you a quick little share, a little story about my family and about the issue of integrity. It's the 8th of August. It's 2001, and I remember the date exceptionally well because it's my birthday eve. Okay, and I've just booked into a hotel room and on my way down from Canberra to Melbourne. Been working in Canberra, driven from Sydney to Canberra that morning, early start in the morning. I've just driven down and I've just got to Albury, just booked into a hotel room for the night because I was absolutely buggered. Just dead, completely exhausted. Been consulting all day and just got there, arrived down there. On my way down to see my wife in Melbourne, get a phone call. And there's this hysterical voice on the other end of the phone, screaming, crying, carrying on at me over the other end of the phone. Couldn't understand it. Knew that it was my wife because the number came up. Couldn't understand what she was saying. I shouted at her. I said, shut up! Stop! I can't understand what you're saying. Just stop. And all of a sudden, another voice came on the phone. And it was a nurse. And the nurse told me, you need to get back in your car. Your daughter's going to die tonight. You see, 12 days later, I've got a photo here. 12 days later, earlier, can we go to the previous one to that? Can you go backwards? 12 days earlier, our daughter had been born. This is our daughter Lily. She'd just been born 12 days earlier with a condition called hyperplastic left heart. She's got half a heart, my daughter. She was born with half a heart. And so 12 days earlier, we'd been through this process and I was on my way down to Sydney, from Sydney to Melbourne to rejoin my family because we were living in a hospital, going through a process of trying to save my daughter's life. The doctors have given her a 50-50 chance of living, that's all. And we had a choice at the beginning of just letting her die, which they told us to do, or to try to push on and hope and pray that she would survive. Cover that up because it's probably a little disturbing and we'll keep moving on in the story. So I run out of the hotel room, get in my car, and I'm now driving to Melbourne. The thing that a nurse doesn't have to tell a racing car driver twice is get there now and drive fast. Okay, so I'm in my car and we're driving to Melbourne. I was very fortunate at that point in time. I had a GTS Monaro, 300 kilowatt version, and let me tell you, it was flat chat. Right, I was driving down the highway doing speeds of, no kids are here, so I can tell you, I was doing speeds of 260 kilometres an hour down the highway. Right, it was pouring rain, pouring rain. I could hardly see at the front of the car, mainly because I was crying. And it was raining on the inside of the car as well as the outside of the car. Right, and I was in tears crying about the fact that my daughter wouldn't make it through the night. And as I was driving down there, you know, the thoughts are flooding through my head and I'm thinking, how can this be? How can this be? You know, she's going to die on my birthday. You know, she's going to die for the rest of my life. I'm going to live the rest of my life with my wife and my son and myself not being able to celebrate my birthday ever again because our daughter had died on my birthday. And so I'm flying down the highway and I'm crying. I've got people ringing. I'm ringing people all over the place, ringing my friends. Pray for Lily. Right? And I've got people ringing the police saying, there's our friend. He's driving down to Melbourne. His daughter's dying. He's driving really fast, but it's okay. He's a racing car driver. Don't stop him. Just get in front of him and escort him in because he's got to get to the hospital. And our policeman politely said to them, I think you've been watching a little bit too much TV, ma'am. You know, if we see him, we'll be locking him up and throwing away the key. And fortunately, you know, that didn't happen and we kept driving. And as I was driving and tears were screaming and strolling down my face and I just couldn't, you know, get it out of my head as to why. You know, I was faced with a moment and the moment was God. Where are you in this? What is happening in my life? And you know, I prayed a prayer at that moment to God and I said, God, whatever it is you want in my life, whatever, you want my house, it's yours. You want my car, my wife's car, it's yours. You want my money? It's yours. Whatever, anything I have, at that moment in my life, anything I had, I was willing to give up for what? The life of my daughter. And I prayed a prayer at that moment. You know, I want you to think about whether you could have prayed that prayer if you were faced with that same situation as me, of my daughter dying and me, and where my material possession lied in regard to that and in relationship to that. And so I've prayed that prayer to God and said, let her live. Take whatever you have, whatever you want, whatever I've got, take it. Now, there's an implied integrity that I've got there, because I'm actually praying that prayer not on my own behalf and only my own behalf. I'm actually praying it on behalf of my wife, because it's half her house, half her cars, half her money. And if I'm actually praying to a God that is real and he decides to take me up on that offer, I'm giving away half of what she's got, or all of what she's got, half of what we've both got. And so there's an implied integrity. It wasn't a throwaway prayer. It was a real prayer at that point in time. So think about you in that situation. Or maybe you've actually been in that situation where you've prayed that prayer. Or at least you can see into that window and actually see that you could have possibly prayed that prayer. So the story continues on. I get into the Melbourne Hospital. I still remember the moment. It's a left-hander as you come into the Royal Children's Hospital. And let me tell you, it's never been taken so fast in ever again or since or before or whatever. And I came in there and I've thrown the car in through there and basically slid into the front room of the hotel of the hospital, and I've got out of my car and I've just run, left the car there, right, and I've just run. I thought about throwing the keys to someone and saying, you know, can you park it? I thought there was probably less chance of getting my car back than worrying about it getting towed away. So I thought against that and I ran into the hospital. And so I've come running into the hospital, flying in through all the different areas, and I've got to the hospital room. And the photo that I just want to show you now is, this is the photo of what we were confronted with. As I came in and I've burst in through the door into intensive care, this is my daughter. This is Lily. Lily lay like this for 12 days. You see, the problem was, this thing here is actually covering her open chest, her open heart. They were supposed to be able to close her. She was supposed to go in for an operation and they were supposed to close her up. Unfortunately, she got so much fluid on her body, they couldn't close her. So she'd been lying there for 12 days like this, and the doctors had decided it was the end. She would not survive any longer. It didn't fix, it didn't correct itself, and so therefore it was the end of that process. And so I came to say goodbye to my daughter. I'm finished with that now anyway, so that's great, thanks. So I came to see the end. So I've walked in, you can imagine I've run in through the door and there's just pandemonium everywhere. Right, the doctors are crying, the nurses are crying, my wife is hysterical, my parents-in-law are there, my parents are there, everybody is there. Now I'm a male and I'm quintessential kind of guy. I don't like having a lot of people around me when I'm crying, right, and when I'm upset. And so I've walked in and I've just got people everywhere and I'm just thinking like, oh, I just want everyone to go. I don't want you here. I just want to be here with my wife. I want to be here with my boy and I want to be here with my girl and I just want us here. But I couldn't do that because these people would live this journey with us to this point in time. So I've come in and everybody is crying. And so it was about 9:30 at night. So it had only been sort of, you know, just on 2 hours since I left the hotel room in Albury when I've run into the room in intensive care. And so I it's about 9:30 at night. And so we all sat down and we all cried and we all laughed and we all did stuff that you'd do at that point in time, just knowing that it was the end times and you're just going to you know, say goodbye, but, you know, work together through this process. So we got to about probably 2 o'clock in the morning, and we were just exhausted. We were just trashed, finished, completely exhausted. And so basically, the doctor said to us, and the nurse said to us, look, go and get 2 hours of sleep. We can see her. She's not going to die in the next 2 hours. Go and get some sleep. You need to get some sleep. You've got a 14-month-old boy. You're going to have to face this tomorrow and face your family, face your friends, and all the whole issue of her death tomorrow. You need to get some sleep so you can get through this. And so you know, kind of, as you can imagine, we begrudgingly went back to the back to the hospital room. We stayed inside the hospital and we went back to the room. And so we get back to the room and we fell into bed, emotionally, physically, spiritually exhausted, and said a prayer quickly about to God, saying, you know, the same prayer that I'd prayed. I'd told my wife about it, about what I'd said. And so we prayed the prayer again. Take whatever you need to take. Just give us our daughter. We fell into a deep sleep. 7 o'clock the next morning, we were woken up by our son. That is the scariest moment in my entire life I can think of, when my son is standing next to our bed, shaking our bed and saying, you know, Mummy, Daddy, wake up. And it's like we've got up and we've seen the alarm clock and it's 7 o'clock. They told us they'd ring us in 2 hours. So we've just thought, she's died. The moment we'd left or whatever, she'd died. They thought there's no point ringing us because she's dead. And so we've rung up and we've rung the room. We've got on the intensive care. It's on fast dial. Ring them up. What's going on? What's going on? You need to come down now. You need to be here. And so we've gone running down, you know, child in arm, you know, dragging him along with us, and got down to the intensive care unit. And as we came banging through the door, again, this time having been, you know, away for a few hours, repeat of last time, as I came crashing through the door into her room, I was faced with a sign above her bed. Happy birthday, Daddy. Now, things slow down in life. You know, things slow down in life. When you get into these situations, like and even in an accident, you know, it breaks down into milliseconds. And milliseconds broke down at that point in time. And so as I ran, as I hit it, and you can imagine as I came through the door and I've seen that and I'm running, we're running towards, it's only 5 feet away. In that point in time, flashing through my mind is no one could be so cruel as to put that up if my daughter's dead or if she's going to die. And so as we arrived at the bed, people came from everywhere. People, doctors, nurses, came from everywhere and said, we don't know what happened. You left and within an hour, fluid started draining out. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. We don't know how it happened. We don't know why it happened. But it is. And within about, less than 2 hours after we arrived in that room, she was taken in and sewn up. A remarkable, remarkable, remarkable experience. You know, the thing is, but the question for me is about the issue of integrity. It's about the issue of integrity in what we did and how we acted and what our response was to that. You see, integrity, the definition of integrity is the alignment of your inwardly actions, your inwardly thoughts with your outwardly actions. So integrity is the alignment of your inwardly thoughts with your outwardly actions. You know, I asked you a question before, you know, could you have prayed that prayer that I prayed? Could you have prayed that prayer? Could you have seen yourself, if you're in my position, doing what we're doing, could you have seen yourself praying a prayer to a God, whether you know him or don't know him, pleading with him to save your child's life? Yeah, my point is, it comes down to a thing of integrity. Because if you answer yes to that, you've got an issue you need to deal with called integrity. Because remember, it's your inwardly thoughts matching your outwardly actions. So you can't walk away and say, I was touched by that. That you can't walk away now and say, well, yeah, I did say in my head that I would think about praying that prayer and not now consider what that means for you as an individual. You just can't do it because otherwise you don't have integrity. And I think as men, the one thing we want to be known for is our integrity. Remembering it's an implied integrity that I'm talking about here, because the integrity I have to live with now is that prayer didn't have a money-back guarantee for 30 days. Right? You know, God doesn't have a short memory. You know, as I picked up my daughter for the first time and was able to cuddle her when she's chest was closed, it wasn't, well, thanks God, got your answer now. Fantastic. I live my life and my wife lives her life knowing every day that God can take that prayer up. Because that's integrity. Integrity is knowing that I own businesses that God can take away. I own a house that God can take away. I have money that God can take away. Because I prayed a prayer that God faithfully answered, and we now have a contract, an agreement in place. Right? And that's what integrity is knowing that that's the case. And so, you know, my challenge for you guys today is twofold. If you know God and you're a Christian and you're one of the men here today from one of the churches or something like that and you know God, my challenge for you is, you know, how are you living out your integrity? I walk each day not forgetting what my agreement is with God. Right? That's integrity. What agreements have you made with God? What sin have you had in your life that you said you're going to get rid of and you don't? That's integrity. I'll call you on it. That's integrity. Something we've all got to be aware of. For those of you that may be here today that don't know God, don't know Jesus, I give you a challenge. Integrity, right, is about leading our families. And let me tell you, as men, we are the most influential person in the family. You know, I say that to women's groups, right? They can, you know, burn their bras all they like. I don't care, right? Men are the most influential people in the family. So if you have thought that maybe you would have made that prayer, but yet you've done nothing with it, you're influencing your family in that way. And so I say to you as a moment of integrity again, is that your integrity is implied. It's implied as the leader of the family. If you have never looked at who Jesus is and you've never really stopped and considered him for yourself and all you've taken is what the media says, what your family says, what your peer group has says over time, and that's where you just place him over there on the right-hand side and think, nah, it's not for me. If you've never, ever really looked at who Jesus is for yourself, well, you've got an issue of integrity, and I'm calling you on it today. And so what we do with Jesus Racing, we carry around this book. It's the Gospel of Luke. It's got the Jesus ute on the front, right? We give this out at schools, and we give this out at men's groups and that sort of stuff. We try to make it a little bit cool. It's got some photos of the ute inside, but it's got the story of Jesus inside it. It's got the story of Jesus inside it. And so my challenge to you is if you're in that category, come and take one of these. They're free, right? No one's going to see it at home. No one's going to see it at work or whatever and think, what is it? It's got the Jesus ute on the front. Looks like a motor racing thing. So come and take one and maybe read for the first time for yourself about Jesus. It is a matter of life and death. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you and share with you and share a bit about motor racing, share a bit about my family and my life. My daughter is 7, just so you know, 7 years of age, and she's a beautiful little girl. She's still got half a heart and will live the rest of her life with half a heart. There's nothing they could do about that. That's just the way it is. One day she'll need a heart transplant, or if there's not one available, she'll die. Probably around 16, 17 years of age. But God gave me those years, gave us those years with her. We should have lost her, but we didn't. And so that's a wonderful answer to prayer. So thanks very much for having me, and I'll hand back over to these guys who are going to do a bit of wrapping up. Thanks.